Welcome to The Cherry Picker, the horror movie podcast where we like to kill people, but not really. I'm your host, Zach Cherry, and with me as always...
Eddie of Edward is Truth.
And if you couldn't figure out, we are talking about Get Out today.
Get Out!
February 24th, 2017. I cannot believe this movie is over 5 years old now. Does that make sense to you?
And yet at the same time, I don't really remember my life before it happened. Like, it feels like it's kind of always been there. It's a movie I'd never wish away
It's like that, the caretaker at the Overlook Hotel. It's like, you always were the Jordan Peele film.
Or maybe it's also just the fact that I've seen the OG Stepford Wives within the last couple months, and I hadn't seen it in many years, so I didn't have it as strong in my memory as for a basis of comparison between that and Get Out.
Yeah.
So now that I do, maybe I was just remembering the Stepford Wives. I don't know. But
well, we've got a new Jordan Peele movie coming out in August.
Yes.
Nope. So we want to on the next few episodes. Well, not right away, but you know, we want to get Out, which we're doing today.
Get Out.
And in a few weeks from now, we'll also be doing Us, just to get us all up to speed
for the
new Jordan Peele movie. Because we're, I mean, I don't want to speak for you, but I'm a huge Jordan Peele fan.
As am I.
Key and Peele, both, like, actually.
Yeah, right.
I'm waiting for him to.
We love you.
Yeah, I'm waiting for Michael Keegan Key. Yeah. What the fuck? To show up in one of these movies? Why hasn't he been in any of them?
Maybe people, you know, by association, like, take it to a comedic place just because of our association with the two of them, because they are fucking hilarious.
Yeah.
But he's doing fine, though. He's working consistently. That IMDb credit roll is just multiplying and multiplying. And yeah, there's just he's going to work forever, and I'm happy about that.
That's good. do you want to lead us into a plot synopsis?
While preparing for their weekend trip from Brooklyn to upstate New York, young photographer Chris Washington asks his girlfriend, Rose Armitage, if her family, whom he's about to meet for the first time, knows that he's black. Rose assures him that they are not racist and there is nothing to worry about. But once they arrive in the seemingly pristine suburb, Chris can't shake the peculiar vibe of every interaction he has with the parents, the son, the house staff, and the neighbors. The longer he stays, the louder the oppressed voices of an unjust past seem to call for him to get out.
Huh? Is it always going to be that voice? Because I always, like, go back to the Evil Dead synopsis. I'm automatically going to think of that movie. But I do like the way that
I think it's going to be the default.
Yeah.
I think it's going to be the default when I can't be Tangina or something.
People
like that,
are, you know? There's been some comments I've seen. People like the new edition. And if you don't, then you can get out, you know? But
get out!
I liked the inclusion, because I think you did this with the cursed one. I remember where that was just, like,
too,
the last word. It's just like, and roll credits. Just segueing right into the title of the movie. I wanted to ask you, though, because you mentioned that they're in a suburb, but it doesn't look like a suburb to me. They're like in the countryside.
No.
There.
I just wanted, I couldn't get Lakeith Stanfield going suburb in the very beginning, the opening sequence that he's talking about. And I wanted it to be there because, I mean, it's still, I mean, it's an upper class suburb for sure, but I mean, it's still, it's striking that note, even though it, I mean, justifiably, yeah, you're right. It's a country house or something. There's probably some term that I can't even reach for that it is that is more appropriate, but I don't know. I mean, you see how long that path is, especially at the end when he is driving away from the house, and you're like, wow, there aren't houses for miles on the way to this place. Yeah. No wonder they could do whatever the fuck they wanted. And that is why remote shit, no matter what the tax bracket, scares me. Because you can do whatever the fuck you want, and who's gonna ever like look in on you or knock, knock, knock? Excuse me, you know. So there's that.
Yes, you're paying
anyway,
for
how do you feel about this movie?
The privacy. How do I feel about it? I think that this is, I'm just trying to think of like a better movie that's come out in the last 20 years. I'm really going back. Like, just something that I would consider, because this to me is a game changer. This is like how I would go in the trajectory of, like, you have Psycho in 1960, you have Halloween in 1978. When, you know, some could argue, you know, Black Christmas or even the Texas Chainsaw Massacre. Then you have Scream in 1996, and I feel like this is the next in line of like the evolution of horror, because this kind of, I mean, while this is not like the first in terms of like elevated horror, but this is like the elevated horror movie that really made elevated horror in vogue and made
mainstream.
More mainstream audiences respond to it and want to see more of it. And certainly Jordan Peele has been like an excellent gateway into that, because like he knows just in terms of like his stories and just like the way that like his movies can be marketed, like the subliminal imagery and all that people like eat the shit out of, that, you know, you see YouTube videos of just like all the hidden meanings of this stuff that people love. It is so digestible for people to see. So I just feel like this this right now, like as it stands, like this is, I mean, well, it's not like Scream-esque in a way of just like by design of what it is, but just in terms of being that game changer, I think that this is the next in line, and that's probably for me why I consider this one of the best movies to come out in the last 20 years. Yeah, because I mean, like 2002 till now, like I'm trying to think of something that I would like better than this.
I mean, we can get into that later, but for me personally, I know what you mean, though. Like, I actually wasn't looking forward to screening it last night.
Oh, no.
Because I was already, like, a little bit emotionally exhausted from some of the other stuff that I'd seen. It was a very busy weekend for me, and I just kind of thought, like, I'm in no mood to sit and watch a perfect movie. Like, you know, there's nothing to pick apart. And also, just because it has been so discussed, I mean, you and I have discussed this movie off the pod before also. Yeah. So we were doing Fright Club. Yeah.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. I forgot about Fright Club. If you go back on my YouTube channel, there was a series of episodes. We only got six in, but it was a fun little concept. Pitting two movies against each other, and based on a poll that was run on the along the YouTube community section of what people preferred, but then kind of like making the points for both sides, and of course with this being Get Out and Jordan Peele, it went up against Us. And I think it was I don't know. You'd have to go back because I don't remember the template. I know that this one won.
Okay.
But I just like in terms of,
because you were the one who decided that. You were the one who decided which.
No, I don't decide who wins.
I thought it was your channel. So
no, it's not my channel, but it's decided by the vote. So like whoever voted for it.
Oh, decided by the vote. But didn't you make a case for your opinion?
I think at the end I might have said like what I liked better. I don't remember. It's been so I don't go back.
That's what I mean. See, it's been so long.
Yeah, like I don't watch old videos of mine, because like normally I like look at them and I cringe because I'm just like, I
hear you.
Yeah, I can't do it.
Yeah, I only have what, like 5 or 6 right now, and it's like I'm already there. I'm already like, oh, the first one.
It's funny that you just you just mentioned this being a perfect movie because I forgot because I'm doing a thing now because I got letterboxed and every time I watch something now I just like go and rate it. So yeah, I'm gonna say, this is 5 stars for me. I'm gonna say this is a perfect movie.
Oh, nice.
Yeah.
No, but the thing is, like, the reason I was just kind of like, you know, potty faced, what's the term I'm looking for? Yeah, it's just, you know, just kind of like a pity pot about like having to sit through a perfect movie is that like, I think the prospect of it was just kind of like, well, what is there left to delve? Like, I'm not going to not watch it because I want it fresh in my head so I can discuss it with you. Yeah. But what new is going to like pop out at me? And I guess I completely forgot that I'm a movie fan.
Yeah.
I don't need to watch something that I believe has been like expertly like pieced together and be detached from that. I can enjoy the ride of the filmmaking as I go, like, even if I already know what's coming. And I did. I kind of surprised myself pretty much from the beginning. Just the opening scene, I got tense. And then once the brother, Shikilisa. And I had it in my head all day. Mm. I couldn't shake it. I'm like sitting at work, like I'm just training on a computer. And I'm just like bored out of my mind because it's week 3. And I'm just sitting there just going like, brother, Shikilisa, Shikilisa. And I couldn't get it out of my head. Yeah. And that's all I know. I don't know any of the other words. Like, and all that stuff, which I fucking love. Like, it's not even like an earworm that like I'm annoyed to have in my head. Yeah. It's just one of those kind of perpetual hypnotic.
Well, do you know what the translation of the song is?
It's something with the black ancestors like telling him to run away.
Basically, yeah, like run away, right? like get out.
Get out. Get out.
Yeah. It's interesting you mentioned like just you, because you said like you weren't ready to watch this just in terms of like you've gotten everything out of it that you could. I don't know if you,
right,
you said that, exactly that, but
no, something along that was kind of my attitude,
because like I've like talked about like Scream in the past and how I feel like every time I watch that there's something new to get out of it, or at least not every time, but like, you know, I might surprise, or the movie will surprise me and I'll see something that I never saw before. And I was watching it both, like, because I was watching it last night and I fell asleep, so I had to finish it today, and both times there was something came up, and this is why, like, sometimes I'm bad and I forget things and I don't write them down, because there was something that came to mind that I really wanted to say, and now I'm hoping that somehow through our conversation in this episode it'll come back to me. But one thing that I did notice, and I've noticed this before, and I had brought it up to you, was the cupboard door, or like the closet door in Rose's room that was open, which is how he eventually found the box with the pictures that were incriminating of her, like, complicity in the Armitage, the Coagula, whatever we're calling it. But the, yeah, because I think when I initially saw it in the theater, I always looked at that and just thought, like, well, that's kind of like plot convenient-y of just like it being open and him seeing that. But then, like, I like on a rewatch, which was probably the one we did a few years back, where I was just like, well, no, what happened was that Georgina opened it, because she had one of her episodes of just like her, like, consciousness came back and took over the body momentarily and opened the cupboard door so Chris could find it. Because there's actually 2 scenes where the cupboard door is open. The first one is when, like, after he's been hypnotized and he wakes up in, like, early morning, you know, when it's just, like, waning light out. And he looks over and he sees the closet door open. But then he, like, looks at his phone and then goes out and starts taking photos. But then, of course, it's open again later on. So I take that to mean that, like, she, just because they do still have some control, or there are times where they can come back, that was her way of helping him out.
That's fascinating that you thought that, because I thought, again, similar but different. because for me, I'm not going to say you're wrong. I think that's fascinating. I'd love to watch the movie all over again and just think, like, because there is a huge case to be made for that, just because Georgina is still largely struggling, visibly struggling with, you know, her transition, obviously. Yeah. She's having a lot more trouble than Walter. But what I get from it is I thought it was Rose who left it open, just because one thing that I've seen Allison Williams in an interview talk about this movie, and one of the things that she really worked hard with Jordan Peele on was planting, you know, the duplicitous nature of the character and creating looks that read one way when you're seeing the movie for the first time and you don't know if she's in on it. You might suspect her, you might not suspect her. And then when you go back and you watch it again, you can see, oh, she's covering her ass, or oh, she's shooting them a look like, enough, you're gonna blow our cover.
Are you talking about when they're at the party? Because she's like, because they're just like, so is it true? Is it better? And she's like, wow. And because I thought, I saw that too, because it's just like, because they're all, because I thought that, because it's just like, how much do they know? Like, are they also aware that, like, he doesn't know that they know that they, now I'm doing like a Friends thing, but it's just like, I just assumed it was,
maybe, they don't know we know they know we
yeah,
know.
Yeah, like they, like it's an auction. Cause like the, what tells me that they do know is like when he walks upstairs and they all go quiet. So clearly this is a thing where they're just kind of like, yeah, like he's the prize. So yeah, I did see it as kind of like, it was like a thing where she's just like, guys, like tone it down. Like probably like after he stepped away, she's just like, you're like, ixnay, like you're being too obvious here. Because some
or
of those,
even at one point,
oh, I was just going to some of like the friends were just like, what are you saying? Like, just like, it's so weird.
Yes.
It's almost like, cause like she was telling Chris, like just smile. Like, you know, she was coaching him on how to approach these people, when it's just like, it seemed like more so they needed to be coached on how to like properly communicate with
how Chris. To keep it under wraps. Like, they're not even masking it. Yeah. They're not even trying to pretend that he's not like this USDA prime choice, you know, cut of beef and everything. And I just, even like when they're at the dinner table and her brother like won't let up on, like, you know, with his weird, you know,
oh, he's so creepy.
Thing. Oh, yeah, he is. And even there's moments where she's like looking at him, like, oh, because even when he's like spilling stuff about her, about like collecting her toenails in a jar and stuff, and I'm just like, you're gonna blow her covers that she's a sociopath, you know? because who else would do that? Yeah. But So I appreciate that. But another thing that I actually saw in preparation for this, it was an interview that Allison Williams did with Seth Meyers. She talked about was the reaction she got from white people only after the movie, who were convinced that poor Rose must have been hypnotized too, right? And she'd be like, no.
Yeah.
She's a terrible person.
So on the Blu-ray, there were deleted scenes. And I didn't watch the scenes because I was just like, whatever. But they had the like Jordan Peele commentary. So I just listened to his commentary over top of them. And he mentioned something about, because there was a deleted scene, which is kind of intercut with the scene where he, I think it's when he approaches her about Walter and his hostile demeanor. It's like right before all of the guests arrive. And I guess she had there was like a little bit more to it, because she said that her mother had hypnotized her to help her with her stage fright, because it was established that she's an actor. So that was something that Jordan Peele took out of the movie, because he didn't want like there to be, because that might have been too much of a tell that, you know, she was complicit with them because she is an actor and she could put on these performances. And and they didn't want any association with the hypnotizing. So it's interesting that people would think that, because like I just look at her and I think she's pure evil. And actually this is something, as I was watching it, I couldn't help but think, like, Rose would make an excellent Ghostface killer, because you would never see it coming. It would, like, her reveal with the keys, like, that is way better than like any fucking Ghostface reveal. Like the like like, you know, I can't do it, babe. Like that is, she's just like, has that like cold sociopath when she's on the phone with Rod, when it's just like her, yes, like her voice is like emoting and like you can like hear it, but her face is stone cold. Like that's just so creepy. Like she's so good and I like hate her because she's just like, she's not, yes, even a fun kind of evil, but she's just so, oh, good at being evil. Like she is like, yeah, it's, I don't know. Like, kudos to Allison Williams. Is that her name?
Yes. Yeah. That's her name. Yeah.
Yeah. Phenomenal.
Yeah. Yeah. That was another thing. Just like, okay, like, phenomenal cast. Like, I mean, you've got this incredible stable of actors who are just turning in these performances that are now legendary and appropriately so.
Every single one of them, too. Like, there is not one, yes, like, bad apple amongst them.
No. No. Thank God there are, like, bad people in the story so we can actually do a cherry picker this week,
right,
but
yeah.
But everybody is entertaining. I mean, even though I hate the sight of the brother, I can't even remember his name right now,
Jeremy.
Yeah. I hate the sight of him, and I'm sure it's just like the context and Jordan Peele's ability to frame him exactly the way he needs to be, and also the actor's ability to just be what's the word I'm looking for, kind of like unscrupulous, yeah, and That's probably the best word I can come up with for him. And just disgusting. Like, I mean, I just the way he asks questions and stuff and touches his mouth. And I'm, yeah, like, stop touching your lips. They're creepy.
Yeah.
And, but every single one of them, like the one who actually really kind of stood out to me this time was because I remembered every moment that I was seeing, but I was just kind of like nailing it, was Catherine Keener. Mm-hmm. Because I feel like she, as Missy, perfect name for one of these like hoity upstate New York types. Yeah. But she, I just noticed her stillness, her kind of like, you know, there's something incredibly predatory about her. And I think the thing that scares me the most, it's similar to the closest thing I can kind of liken it to is, Louise Fletcher as Nurse Ratched in One Flew Over the Cuckoo's Nest, the movie, just because there is nothing but hostility coming from her, but it is coming from the softest voice and the most, yeah, kind of like relaxed sense of like, well, I'm the one in power.
Yeah.
So that's I'm going to get you.
I'm glad that you brought that, yeah, up because that's something that I really noticed as well. Like not just with her, but with like every member of the family. Because they kind of like had a, yeah, different stance. And we saw that like with yeah, Catherine Keener in particular, she was always kind of like nestled up to something. Like they're like when Chris and Rose come back from their walk, like before like they're going to leave, and they're all standing there and it's the creepy shot of them all just like smiling at him or not smiling at him or whatever. And she's just like, she's kind of,
she's not smiling.
Yeah. I don't think she's smiling, but she's kind of like, she's like wrapped around, Bradley Whitford, Dean's arm. And just like, I think she might have her head on his shoulder, but then there's a scene later on. It's the one where when Rod calls Alice, Rose, I'm gonna keep mixing up the actors from the characters, and they're all standing like, because you see Catherine Keener, you see, Missy, she's kind of leaning against the door frame like a very relaxed, yes, position. Dean, yeah, is standing in the middle kind of like, I think he might have his arms crossed, and then you see Jeremy kind of like pacing back and forth in the background, like kind of twirling around the lacrosse stick while like Rose is like sitting in the chair, and it's just like, these are like the most evil people. Like that's the thing, like it's what's so amazing about it, because it's like there are no layers to these villains. Like they are strictly evil. Like normally you would have like complex villains where there's just like the villains at least know that they're like in their mind what they're doing is good, and not to say that they don't think that what they're doing is good, because they're obviously helping their community. But they know, right, that they're fucking awful. Like they pretty much, yeah, get that. And that's what's it makes them a little less dimensional, but just like the way that Jordan Peele directs them and they act, it's just like they are such larger than life characters.
Well, see, there was another thing that happened that I had the picture in my head. I was like, I know I've seen these shots before, but they occurred to me in a different way this particular screening, and that was during the bingo card auction, as right. it were. And just, I think it's once Stephen Root's character finally, I can't remember his character, I'm not going to remember anybody's names, but Jim, once Jim wins, you know, the blind fellow who wants to be able to see again. So he's, don't lump him in with all the racists and everything, just because he's dehumanizing.
Well, here's my story. I interrupted yes. your thought, but here's what my take on that was. And I, like, this kind of goes back to something that you have said before, just like kind of like the qualities that you think are like the most vile of just like him being like the one, like, I'm not like the rest of those. Like, I don't care that you're black or anything. Like, I just want your eyes. And just the fact that like, that he's blind, I see that as like, it's kind of like the omission of like, just like you're seeing evil and you're just not doing anything about it. I forget the term you use for that. So that's kind of like, that's his villainous
passivity in the face of evil.
Yeah, basically. That's his villainous trait. And the fact that he is blind is kind of like the symbolic of that aspect of his character.
I couldn't agree more. Yeah. That said, when he wins, I was watching the fan, because Rose wasn't there, but Jeremy and Missy were watching from like the patio, and I think he was seated and she was leaning all nestled like in her sweater or something, like in a doorway.
All that was missing was like the cup of cocoa or just
right. the tea.
Or yeah, she did have the teacup.
but both of them, for the first time in the movie, looked miserable. And what I loved about it, it didn't make me sympathetic to them. I didn't think, oh, look, they feel really bad about what they do. All I could think was, you lead joyless existences. Like, you'll continue doing this and continue justifying it to yourself and continuing. I mean, I'm sure they're finding comfort in their lavish, you know, like, lifestyle. Mm-hmm. And you know, and I do believe, like, get a kick out of, like, this power that they hold. And also this power that they seem to be kind of, like, building this army on the shoulders and on the backs of other, and in the minds and bodies of other people, stealing their lives from them. But it was almost necessary, because it's kind of like when I see people who I would kind of like associate with those kinds of behaviors and that kind of mentality in real life, one thing that I always come back to is they're not really happy. You know, there's nothing truly gratifying and rewarding about it. You're basically, you're sustaining for now, but I love that there's a human quality in the sense that, like, what they do doesn't bring them joy. It just kind of sustains them. Mm-hmm. And they'll take the rewards they can get from it. But I love that there isn't some kind of like advertised moment of them all, like, you know, toasting each other and going, ah,
no, because that would make them
like
too
evil
human, you know?
Like, yeah. Yeah. But it would also, I think it would actually make them too cartoonish. I like the fact that I feel like the thing that scares me the most about them is that they do feel like people. Yeah. Like I feel like I could walk into a house like that. Yeah. Maybe they're not doing everything that the Armitages are doing, but oh god, the more I talk about it, the more it disgusts me.
Yeah. Well, I was going to say
there was also yes. Go ahead.
Okay. Well, I was just going to say, like, out of performances that kind of like stood out to me this time, the guy who plays Walter. Yes. Just like seeing him, I was just like, holy shit, like, this guy is just, because he does, like, he, exactly how Chris says, it's just like, it wasn't so much what he said, but how he said it. Because it was almost like, even just like the approach or like the introduction, because Chris like says something to him, or is just like, hey, like, what's up, or whatever. And he turns to him, and it's almost like he's like thinking for like a little bit longer, like how he's gonna react. And he's just like, he's like, nothing I don't want to be doing. And and I think we've talked about this before, but even Jordan Peele mentioned this, that I guess the directorial cue that he gave that actor was to play it as if he had a secret that he couldn't tell. Right. Or he wanted to tell, but he couldn't tell. And yes, that's why he's like super gleeful and just like, I know something you don't know.
But also, Marcus Henderson is the name of the actor. One thing that I love that he did as Walter, the grandfather,
Roman is the grandfather.
Roman is the name. Because I was, until this very moment, I always thought that like Georgina and Walter were the names of the older people who were living in them, but maybe
I think they took on. I mean, unless there were like aliases, because they didn't want to. For anyone to find them, but because we find out that when the Andre, I forget what they say, Logan, his name is now Logan.
Yes.
But I just assume that that's the original guy's name, like the actual old man that would have gone into his body. So maybe Walter and Georgina are just like a cover because they know that. Like, obviously, they're not the groundskeeper and maid. It's just because Chris is coming over for the weekend, so they have to, like, play this part. And that's why, you know, they're driving up to the house. And I'm sure, like, while they were on their way, Rose messaged them. It was just like, we're going to be there in 5 minutes. Mm-hmm. So then that was, like, the cue for the two of them to like, take their positions to play the hired help.
Yeah, whatever it was, now I'm just getting really, really bummed out thinking I really wish I knew the names of the people who were taken over, who had to basically,
it could have been Walter and Georgina. I just don't think that Armitages would be that considerate vessels that they've
and also taken over. You're showing your hand then, like then there's a paper trail if you give like the actual name of the person who you've inhabited. But a point I wanted to make about him also was the fact that, again, tiny little things that I'm getting that I'm like, I thought I knew everything about this movie. But just the fact that I got it for the first time, just his delivery, Walter's to Chris, when he says, like, well, I'd better get back, you know, to work and mind my own business.
Yeah.
And the way he was saying it, I was like, you're sending a message, like, and that's what you should probably be doing too right now, right? And I was just like, oh, God, you're disgusting. and I truly feel for him, like, I mean, if we can jump ahead to the end, like, oh, my God. Okay, like, both of them, we'll talk about Walter since we're on him right now, but just, like, when he comes back, I love the fact that he had the presence of mind in the middle of that road when Rose is coming up the walk and she doesn't know that he's no longer her grandfather in there. And he asks for the gun calmly.
Yeah.
And she hands it to him.
Well, he says, I want to be the one to do it.
Right. And because he's putting it that way, he still has like his faculties about him. He knows everything that has been going on up until that point, and he is smart enough to know I've got my moment. I'm not going to lose it. Mm-hmm. I need the gun. You know, I want to be the one to do it now. But then the thing that, and I you can see it all on Chris's face too, in the reaction, just like the fact that he chooses to take himself out too. And I that was another moment that I don't think I thought about in quite this way. I was just kind of like focused on, oh, cause you know, of the things you've seen, like you probably don't want to like, you know, like live through that and have those memories. It's probably better to, but all, and I was like, and also cause I'm in shock, like the first probably like four times that I saw it, cause it happens to me all over again on an emotional level. This time, I just thought, this is your way of keeping, because he's still there. Just because the flash goes on doesn't mean Grandpa's out of there. Like, there was a surgery. There was a piece of his brain.
I just figured that they just a matter of places for a little bit. So then the Grandpa was in the sunken place.
Oh, yeah. But because he's still there, because the Grandpa is not long gone and, like, you're back and you can live your life, you know he's going to come back and you don't want that. So you're going to take yourself out and take him down with you. Yeah. And again, tragedy, like Jesus Christ, but good for you, boo. Like, keep Grandpa the fuck out of our business. Yeah. And then the whole, okay, Georgina, Betty Gabriel is the name of the actress. Okay. The amount of things she is playing in the moment that I replicated for my introduction in this episode.
Yeah. And we all know.
Yes. Because we all knew going in, it was in the trailer. And it was that's when we knew, oh, fuck, what is this? Yeah. And then when it happened in the theater, the first time I saw it, I remember it happened to me all over again. I was like, what the fuck is going on? I'm so scared. I don't know.
Or it's Chris's terrifying. Reaction of just being like, that's one crazy bitch.
Right. And it's but the thing is, it's no less terrifying when you know exactly what's going on. It's actually more terrifying because you can see poor the woman, the real woman whose body, you know, is being violated, pushing through. Like she even, I don't know how it had such an impact on me. I had to rewind it and watch it again. Just her little kind of like jut forward toward Chris, and even his response, like it's almost like microscopic, but he does kind of like start back, like, oh, what's up? And then, you know, the no, but just like the wrestling match that's going on inside of that woman's brain, and even just like her whole sensory apparatus. I wish she could have been nominated for something because it's perfect. It's a perfect performance. Because also, just like, it hits all the notes that it's supposed to hit. Yeah. Like, every time she is on screen, she is terrifying and unsettling.
And I love the way she says, I can assure you there was no funny business.
And tattletale.
Snitch?
Oh, my God. So yeah, absolutely adore like everything that they have.
And I think she was the one jump scare in this movie. You know, if there had to be a jump scare, it's like when we see her silhouette in the background when Chris,
with that musical sting. Yeah. Oh God, and I jumped again. I had forgotten that was there when it was there. I was like, oh, well done, well done. But I wanted to ask you. Just because we were talking about like Rose and how fucked up she is, like sitting there listening to "I've Had the Time of My Life," and looking up black people on. I guess what was she googling that?
I think she was just scouting, just, you know, like
just scouting. Yeah, just looking for leads, and you know, sipping the milk and eating the fucking Fruit Loops. Yeah. Allison Williams says she's like she can no longer eat Fruit Loops in person, out in public, in front of people anymore. They're ruined for everybody because she's just going to bum everybody out. But I wanted to ask you, if you could replace that song, I've Had the Time of My Life, with another song. I mean, only if it occurs to you. Because I was trying to think, like, what else just kind of like, because it's kind of tonally perfect. Yeah. But I'm trying to think, the only thing I could think of is just like that, I thought about that joke in a movie I've never seen, but I've seen the trailer for White Chicks with the Wayans brothers. And when all the white girls get in the car and they start playing that song, that I don't know, it's on the Legally Blonde soundtrack, that it's just got that thing, that piano, it's just that, if I could just see you tonight, 1,000 miles, I think that's what it's called.
Yeah, okay.
And yeah, I'm just that says white girl to me. That says white girl to me. So I don't know, I wondered if there was like maybe a song
thought about it. I love the fact that it's I Had the Time of My Life. I mean, it's barely audible, even then. But no, I don't know. I don't have anything.
Cool.
I mean, if I think of something, I'll let you know. But yeah, just in terms of because like the symbology of the Fruit Loops, dry, separate in the bowl with the milk in the glass on the side. I mean, other than the fact that like
multicolored and
it's separating the whites from the colors. That's the symbolic imagery of it. But just the fact that like only a sociopath. Excuse me for anyone who eats their cereal like that, but only a sociopath would munch on dry cereal like that with a glass of milk with a straw. Like the only thing that would have made that more perfect is if it was like Georgina had prepared like a sandwich with like the crust cut off for her, and just like this like little like it's like she
Lunchables.
You know, she just came back from her like piano recital or something, and it's just like Nanny's gonna make you a snack and. Mm-hmm. Yeah, like Rose is just, and even like the beginning of the movie, because like when we first see her, she's like eyeballing all these pastries, and she's just looking so like gleeful about it. She's just like, yeah, and it's like you initially see that, and you're just like, oh yeah, she's just thinking about like, oh, how delicious this is, and like, you know, I get to spend the weekend with my boyfriend, and we're gonna go to the parents' house, but like, really, she's just like, yeah, we got him in the bag, and. And, you know, and that's why, like, to me, like, there are no clues at all. I mean, if there are clues that she's bad, like, it's not until, like, we see the photos. I think, like, the one thing, you might have mentioned this to me before, is, like, when they hit the deer, she doesn't go with him. Like, she doesn't go to look at it. It's just him. So it's just sort of, like, a very subtle... hint, just to show that she doesn't care about the loss of life in that
life.
Sense.
Well, because also, I mean, that was before. I remember the first time I saw the movie. I just associated it with like him being compassionate and moving to the side of the road. I didn't know what was coming as far as the story and his association with a life being lost. Mm-hmm. You know, off of a road, like, and just being abandoned, and that's why he couldn't walk away.
Yeah, but just like in correlation with his backstory, with his mother.
Exactly. Yeah, but if you're watching the movie for the first time and you have no spoilers, then you know you don't know that that's coming, and you just kind of. It might just look like he actually has the humanity to go over and she does not.
Yeah.
But it didn't make me suspect her that first time. I wish I were that smart. Yeah. I actually, there was only one complaint that I had. Ooh, Nat. I hate this summer. But there was only one complaint that I had. Nat's flying around my head. About the movie. And it's not even a complaint, but it was just something I noticed for the first time. And... oh shit! I just lost it.
Backtrack.
God damn it! It was in my head.
And
I know the gnats completely distracted me.
Dead deer's pastries.
Dead deer's pastry. No, but it was something to do with Rose, and it was something to do with like something that happened. And I was like, oh no, it wasn't Rose. That's what it was. Thank you. Okay, I found it. It was Missy, and it was just something. I mean, I guess it feels like years are passing, you know, in the movie, like, you know, the amount of time he has to spend in that house with those people, because the minutes fly like hours. But it just seemed incredibly strange to me for the first time ever. And this, it's not really a criticism, but it just struck me as odd. Missy and Chris in the scene where she hypnotizes him and first kind of introduces him to the sunken place. Mm-hmm. That is really the last direct exchange they have, I think, before he has to kill her.
She definitely, you know? she doesn't obviously doesn't disappear from the movie, but it's like, that's up until that point, there was the exchange with Georgina where, which I mean, I don't even like, it didn't seem that odd, like, because Rose was like making a big deal. She's like, did you see how rude she was to Georgina? And all she said was just like, oh, Georgina, maybe you should go lie down or something. But it seemed like she was still being like very warm and hospitable and concerned about people, you know, all throughout like that scene and dinner. But it was definitely, there was a switch when, like, I think it was after, because she's like, come take a seat. And I think that was like the last moment where she actually seemed like she was like a genuinely nice person, because then she's like, do you smoke in front of my daughter?
Yeah.
And like from there, like that was very like hostile. And just because we didn't,
terrifying.
We like, because that was like the last point that we left with her and Chris and like really like with her and the audience as well. Like that sort of like left us on that note of just being like, I don't think I can trust this woman.
Yes.
But the thing is, like, for like all of the clues that might have been there of just like, and not just with Rose, but like with everyone, because like clearly, like obviously Jeremy would have been like the one who's just like, this is like probably would have been the biggest sociopath out of the bunch of them at that point. But it still seemed like everyone was still kind of like there, like there were still moments where they were redeeming themselves. Cause they're like right following the deer, hit, you have Rose defending Chris, like to the police officer, and which is actually like, yes, you know, one of the sweetest moments, if not for her turning out to be a piece of shit, where she's just like, nobody fucks with my man. Cause he's like, that was hot. You know, like,
but I remember sitting by my sister in the theater in that moment and her going like, you know, like we like to think we're, you know, relatively socially conscious. It's just kind of like, no, you got to just let him, like, oh God, this is okay. See, this is privilege in like real time, because like if something goes wrong, she's not going to have to pay the price. I mean, and I understand, like, after the fact, like, you can look back and go, like, she wants to cover up the paper trail. She doesn't want, you know, any kind of evidence of anybody, like, knowing that he's going up there and stuff like that. It was also interesting.
It's like that you mentioned that, because that cop came back originally, like, in the alternate ending, which was the original ending.
Yes.
Where it's not Rod. Ugh. Who pulls up as the cop, and then he gets arrested, and the end is actually him in jail and him kind of like coming to terms. It was terrible. I'm glad that they changed it. The thing is, like, the implication of what could have happened or where it could have gone was enough for us that to have that, like, I guess, like, the twist at the end that it was Rod. That was like the catharsis. So you didn't really need to have the sad ending for him, but just with that in mind, that like if the cop was to come back, they already have that history where he knows, like, he was with them before on the side of the road. So I don't know, because it's funny that you do bring up the point that like she didn't want a paper trail or anything, but I don't think it would have mattered anyway, because the cop would have seen him and just automatically been like, oh yeah, my instincts were right, or you know, whatever.
No, and I'm really glad that because I rewatched the original ending before we started this, just because I don't think I had ever actually sat down and watched it. I'd heard about it a lot. So depressing. And,
such a bummer.
But also, aside from just being like a bummer, like, it's also, I think, kind of, I don't know, it's just the wrong fit for the movie, because I think it's the last line that he says is, because, you know, Rod's trying to talk to him about, like, you know, you gotta remember names. We gotta, you know, and he's like, I don't remember anything. It's just like, well, you gotta, you know, like, we gotta get this going. We gotta just talk to me. Talk to me and things will start coming back and we'll start building up a thing and you'll have a case and we can, you know, stop these people. And he's just kind of like, it's okay. I stopped it. And Rod just looks at me. I think he says it again. He's like, I stopped it. And then he just hangs up and walks away. And it's like, okay, but I mean, there are still people who are living, you've already seen them. we still have Logan King, you know, with Andre.
I mean, as far as we know,
using Andre's body and stuff like that.
As far as we know, because I mean, like, if there have been more of them, we probably would have seen them. Like, there would have been a lot more black people at the barbecue.
I don't know. I don't know.
That I feel that, like, if, because like we're saying, like you were saying that, like, why am I forgetting her name? Georgina was having a lot of difficulty adjusting to it. So it kind of like tells us that she's a new, like, this is new for her. Like the grandma probably passed away very recently and was just put inside of Georgina. And also, if you look at the order of the photos that he goes through, her photo, like Rose and Georgina, is the last one, which might imply that she was the most recent before him. I don't remember if we saw a photo of Andre in there.
We did right before.
I think they said took place 6 months before that.
Not Andre. We saw Walter. I don't remember if we saw Andre either. I feel like that would have stood out to me anyway.
But I mean, like, but at the same time, like, if there are these photos of all these people, you would expect that, like, we would see them. So, I mean, at least all the people in those pictures have been victims of them. The only problem is that, I mean, based on like the scene with Rod at the police station where they're like laughing at him, and the fact that like the whole house burns up and all the evidence is basically gone. Like it's you know, like he could claim whatever, depending on what they find in the rubble. But even then, I wanted to ask you, like, what do you think happens next? Like in the canonical ending where they drive off, like, does Chris and Rod, like, do they have a conversation and be like, we need to report what happened here? Or do they just say, let's just get the fuck out of here and never come back? Because, like, it's almost like a way that if they go and report this, it's like, it could incriminate him, and they just go back there and find all these dead bodies and no real evidence to point towards anything, that they might just say, like, it just seems like you came up here for the weekend and you murdered these people, and then you have an entire community of people who can vouch for them, and they might say, yeah, we saw Chris at the barbecue, and you know, it's like one of those things that's, it might be better for this. I mean, because he did stop it, because like the coagula is, it's,
but we don't know what happened to those other people in the photos, so that's why I'm
I understand, like, really those people, sure, like, they're still out there, but it's almost like a case of just like, there's no way that we can prove it, and if he, almost like if he,
but there is,
what's that?
All they have to do is go knock, knock, knock on the door. They can take Erica Alexander and the other cops that Rod already spoke to. Yeah. If he brings Chris with him and goes, this is the guy I was talking about, you've got to listen to a story. They see him all bloody, and then they're going to sit there, they're going to listen to a story. And then if they follow up like the next day and go over to somebody's house, and all they have to do is find one of the people and just get that phone and just flash in their eyes and they get the person back. Yeah.
I mean, easier said than done, because voila. I mean, like, there's like
warrants
and shit that, but like at that point, it's almost like there's all these dead bodies on this property.
But there's also like, I mean, stuff that won't burn up is like the medical equipment that's in the basement. What's that doing there? Yeah. I mean, I'm sure there's enough that they could piece together. And also maybe like, yeah, I don't know. I like to have hope.
I mean, I think the hope is that he ended it and he got out. But I mean, I always have these thoughts, because like we talked about this like at the end of Ready or Not, like what happens to Grace next? And you brought up a really good point, is like, well, she can just take them out to the shed and show them the pit of like the goat pit.
Yes.
Like, you know, all the bodies and stuff like that. So,
and the human bodies, you know,
that's always like my favorite. Like there should... not that there should be, but it would just be fun if there was like a post-credit scene that would just show like the aftermath, you know, like what happens next, and just like to give us that happy end. It doesn't have to, it can be like a funny little thing, just like playing over the credits. It doesn't have to actually be canon, but just something that, you know, is more just like everything's going to be okay. You know, I think like a good example that like was in The Faculty, like, you know how they, cause they do the pictured credits at the end. And then we see John Stewart, cause he's got like his like bandaged up fingers that are cut off on the eye patch, just to let us know that he survived, you know?
I was just, I don't need that. I think I'll just carry my hope that like they actually tell, you know, the same people, because at least Rod already has like a history of like trying to register a complaint and actually trying to take some kind of action.
I don't need to see any of that. I just think it's funny.
No, I don't need to see it.
That might have ruined its perfect rating for me, you know?
But I feel like, because it's interesting, because as I was watching this movie, having like seen the OG Stepford Wives, like the 1975 version so recently, I was like, wow, this movie actually is so much more like a kind of sequel or you know, just like tonally like a sister film with the Stepford Wives than the Stepford Wives remake is, because
the Nicole Kidman one.
I mean, I like that one. It's fun, but it's
not a horror movie.
It is not a horror movie, and it's, I mean, I appreciate that there's a new twist in it, and for anybody who hasn't seen it, check it out. Mm-hmm. But with this one, even just like some very intentional things that actually resonated with me a lot this time, like the fact that Chris is a photographer and we see him like taking pictures, and it just took me back to I think her name's Catherine Ross. who's the main character in Stepford Wives, and mm-hmm. she was the photographer, and the fact that he has no living parents, she had no living parents, and these two people are being mm-hmm. brought into this seemingly kind of like heavenly, you know, like what culture would have you believe, picture perfect kind of household, and all it's going to do is rob you of your identity and put something else in your place, you know, basically. And it can, because as far as, you know, there are people who will miss you, but no one who's like blood, nobody who, you know, has any kind of like, I guess, pull, what's the word I'm looking for? If like an investigation is like conducted or something like that, friends only know so much, you know, mm-hmm. like, but Rod is the best friend. I love Rod. I love that he's in the movie because Rod is the character for me who is the audience. Mm-hmm. Every time he was on screen, he was saying exactly what I wanted to be saying.
Rod is the Randy Meeks of Get Out. Except, you know, he did go off on that, like, that sex slave tangent thing.
Yeah.
There's all these like not deleted scenes, but I guess like alternate scenes of like what his line would be. Like there was like six or seven different scenes. And one of them was it's just like he's like it's like I told you like something about like sex slaves, and then of course like Chris is just like playing it like not even reacting to it at all. There were just like two funny that I think like Jordan Peele eventually settled on the one that we get where he's just like whatever it's like on TSA like considered this shit
TSA
handle. It was the right amount of like of like catharsis and comedy that they could just like they could end the movie on that note. Because it's interesting because you mentioned Stepford Wives and I think you mentioned Rosemary's Baby because those are definitely like influences with this movie for sure.
Oh, totally.
But I don't know if you mentioned like because this is like basically like the horror movie version of Guess Who's Coming to Dinner. No.
It is.
Yeah.
No, that's actually, except for the fact that he has no parents, but totally. Other than that, the premise, sure. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And it just like, it makes me think like go back to like, scenario. You know, like how other, I wouldn't call this art house. It's definitely like elevated for sure. But, it's just like in terms of like how other movies have sort of like Midsommar being a elevated or art house version of The Wicker Man, and then like Hereditary and Paranormal Activity or shit like that. So just like taking I like the idea, or even like Happy Death Day being the horror movie version of Groundhog Day, you know?
Groundhog Day,
right. Yeah. Gotcha. So I like that aspect. Like I would love to see more movies do that. Like just take a classic, which is not necessarily a horror movie, but then just like horrify it, you know?
Totally. Yeah, I love that subgenre. We should do a pod just talking about those. But I think we are. But but there was because there was also even just like one illusion that I got like with it felt like. And it just felt like a slight nod to The Shining for me. Not exactly. It just felt like a wink though with Jordan Peele, putting Chris in that chair and, having the television, the perfectly symmetrical room mm-hmm. and having the freestanding television. Now, granted, it's closer to the wall than the television in The Shining was, mm-hmm. but there's still, and it's also much larger, so it could easily be like, there could be wires like leading into a socket right behind it. Mm-hmm. But because there were no visible wires, like, you know, going off from the corner or anything like that, and it was just this pristine, you know, thing that was perfectly center screen that was like, just kind of like, yeah, and then the television comes on, and then there's the action around the television.
I was gonna say, just as interesting. Whoever edited their Behold the Coagula video, because they're just like, you have to think that like they actually like hired someone to just like, and we need to make this like we're advertising this thing, so we need to like put together this like really intricate video with like effects and whatnot, and you know have the little the stuff with Roman just being like, oh, hi there, you know. I didn't see you come in.
And also, I love the cheeriness, like the kind of like, oh, don't worry about it. We'll take good care. You know, like, yeah. I mean, there were, okay, and that actually calls into mind. Sorry, if you want to.
No, say I was going to say, like, it really reminded me of. I don't know if you ever watched Lost. But there,
no.
Okay, well, this probably won't make sense to you, but if anyone remembers the show Lost. Because there was, like, without, like, getting into, like, spoiler stuff, because I don't even really remember that series, but I just know that there was, like, a lot of kind of, like, videos and, like, commercials like that with the villains of the story, or just, like, as they were uncovering the secrets of the island and, like, the organization that that worked on the island and stuff, and they would have, like, similar, like, and, like, just videos like that that were, like, tutorials or just, it's the word I'm looking for. Was like orientations of just like, okay, this is gotcha, what you can like expect, sort of thing. So it just felt like maybe even more like Fallout or like the video games of just like, this is, you know, like, you know, how you protect yourself from like a nuclear like explosion. Or, right, yeah. Right, it's right. Like the old, like the school things. It's just like duck and cover, you know?
Yes, okay, understood completely, and I definitely get that vibe. I even love the fact that I can identify the family and know that that's little Rose and that that's little fucking Jeremy.
Little Jeremy. Well, they even have all the photos when he's giving him the house tour at the beginning.
Right,
and
right.
And the basement is off limits because of mold. And well, no, it's off limits because that's your...
Sure.
Yeah. Oh, sure. Yeah.
Sure.
Oh, really? But, you're going to give me the house tour and not show me the basement?
What are you?
I don't know. I'm just going off of you. That's the thing. Oh, if you give me a house tour, you best be showing me every nook and cranny.
Y'all ain't killing me, yeah. But or whatever you're doing, whatever. Did they have a name for the process? I don't even remember. But whatever the process is, y'all ain't putting me in the sunken place. That's what it is. But anyway, no. Just thinking about like the kind of cheery hypocrisy with which Roman like addresses Chris and everyone he plans to do this to in the future, and to almost kind of like be happy about it, and almost feel like kind of soothed by it and everything like that, and not completely enraged and betrayed and. You know, the words, just all the words, but it leads me to something that I remember affected me a lot after I saw the movie in terms of like reaction to it. It was a YouTuber who shall remain nameless, but who reviewed movies, and because I don't need people getting in his DMs like, you know, giving him death threats or calling him a racist, but it made me unsubscribe because he was talking about this movie and he was saying. In fact, I think the movie kind of calls into question whether these people are actually racist or not. Because his justification for this was because they actually seem to admire black people for their agility and their strength and their improved kind of like physical prowess. Mm-hmm. And that doesn't sound like racism to me. And I'm just like, oh, you must stop talking right now. because... Okay, like the dehumanization. Yeah, right. Exactly. Like the complete dehumanization and the fact that they plan to not. I mean, it's not even just kill. Like, I mean, because it isn't kill, but it is robbing life, but keeping you alive in a corner because it suits them, actually, because the motor skills need to be going and everything like that. And, you know, we'll work out the kinks and everything like that. But it's worth completely usurping one person's life. Because you want more, and the fact that he completely missed that to the point where he like actually posted it and out for the world to see, and I mean he was white, but I don't think that needed to be said, but he was, and I just remembered thinking like how many people are going to watch this video and go you know, and it really things like that bother me. There was another case where I actually watched. There was two YouTubers who would watch, kind of do what we do, like watch a movie and then discuss it. Yeah. But they would also it was like quasi reaction video and quasi discussion.
Yeah.
And they watched it. And this was a guy who could not see one of the guys of the two could not watch a movie without there being a black person on screen and without him making some kind of comment about it, like some kind of racial comment about it. And I remember being like, I don't know if I can keep watching this guy. Then I saw them watch this movie, and he said it should have been called The Stepford, and he didn't use the N word.
He didn't use that.
But he used the other N-word that people used to use instead of black, which I'm not even going
to
say.
My reaction to that is the same as Rose's, which is like, wow.
Right? just kind of like, and then a glare, a tight glare. Like, really? But and I remember I just typed in the Stepford N with like, a blank space after it with a question mark and just said unsubscribed. And then I unsubscribed and I haven't visited that so channel. Pitchy. So some people aren't capable of discussing this movie, I've found. And it really makes me sad.
I mean, okay. Well, the thing is, just to answer to that it's not overt racism, it's the liberal elitist racism, or just the mentality of just like, oh, well, no, I'm not racist because like I have a black friend. That sort of racism, which in a way is almost more threatening, because it almost goes back to what I was saying about the I forget the character's name as well, but the art dealer, the blind art dealer, that it's, I'm almost like you're
Jim,
just,
Jim.
Yeah. In the doing nothing or just passivity in the face of evil. Even though that these people are doing evil here, but it's just like that, the mentality definitely of the neighbors or the friends is sort of that thing. 'Cause like, you know, like you're like if you're not racist, you're not going to start, you know, making the one black person or sort of the one of the two black people at the party feel uncomfortable by making the conversation all about them and their race. And it's just like, and not only that, but just like not really like having that awareness of just being like, what are you saying, sort of thing. And that goes back. That's why Rose is such a sociopath, because she's actually like, she's mindful of that. She understands like everything that she says to Chris throughout this movie. I believe that she believes that and thinks that. And that's why I don't think that she's hypnotized. I think that she's just actually that much of a sociopath because she gets it.
I do too.
She understands, but she doesn't care. And that's like, she knows that like, yeah, these people are fucking like losers. And
it's almost like her mission, as it were, is more important to her than all of that other stuff that you're talking about that she knows.
Yeah.
And also knows social cues like, because that's another sociopath or even psychopath kind of like trait, which is like, I'll just observe what the most acceptable thing to be, you know, to draw people to me and to be kind of like appear normal. I'll just observe and, you know, monkey see, monkey do. Mm-hmm. And then I'll, but, you know, behind closed doors is, you know, what do they say? Like, if you want to know what a man's true nature or a person's true nature, judge what they do when nobody's watching, something like that.
Sure. eat dry fruit loops and sip milk through a straw. All that needed to be there was like for that to be like a silly straw with like all the loopy loops.
Oh my God. And then, but I also, the scene that really happens for me with her is also just like the phone call with Rod. It happens for me with him too, but just like, the where she's just sitting there and just kind of emotionless face with like, I think there's one thing where she's just kind of, oh my God, you know, like with a quiver in her voice, but there's no expression on her face and it's terrifying. And then the fact that like she starts in front of her parents talking about how something like that and getting graphic.
But also the fact that she,
like, what are you talking about?
Well, cause sort of like her appearance throughout most of the movie is like this, like she's got like the hair down and like the bangs and everything. And as soon as she reveals herself, it's like, we're going to pull this back into a tight ponytail. And I love like how Jordan Peele like does that with like the characters of just like, now that she's revealed, we're going to completely change the look of her as well. And also, we haven't mentioned this, but just like kind of like the wardrobe of the characters throughout, because that was one thing I noticed. Because like you've got Chris and he's got his blue shirt and is it the denim or whatever. But I was like even noticing and then you like Walter and he's got like the deep greens and everything. So I liked the use of color and like just how everything looked and popped on the screen. But then the fact that she's wearing the striped shirt, like the red and white, that when they're together it's mm-hmm. the American flag, which we talked about before but not on here. I love like the symbology of that.
Yeah, so it's like this fucked up flag, but then also it can be used to kind of like if there is any clue also again, like, you know, to be had from a design standpoint, you notice that a large collection of the people who are coming to that party are also swathed in red and black and white. Mm-hmm. And she's wearing red. He has no red about his person, I don't think, at any point during this movie. Maybe until like the siren and the police lights are reflecting on his face. And
well, when he's covered in red, it's the same thing with Grace and Ready or Not, just like white throughout until like she just becomes more blood drenched as the movie goes on. That was another that was like another moment too. Like going back to Missy, like the confrontation when they finally do cross paths again at the end there. And I love the way he plays it. How do you say his name? Daniel Kaluuya?
Kaluuya.
Yeah. It's like Kalua, but Kaluuya. Like there's like such a good actor too. And it's so jarring too when you hear them speaking like in real life, and you're just like, he's actually English, and it's just like wow, like he's like so good at just of doing an American accent. But just the way in that scene when they're kind of like they're at that standoff, and like because first he like smashes the teacup, and then it's like, what are you gonna do? And then also with her, because it goes back to her kind of like, she's not really emoting very much. She's more just like, like almost like that same somber look that she had before, until she like grabs the, I can only assume it was like a letter opener or something, and just like stabs into his hand, and just how he has no real like reaction to it. It's almost like he like leans more into it. Like it's like he absorbs it. Like you can just see on his face, he's like, I'm like taking this pain in, and I'm like using it to like empower myself to then like flip it around on you. And I love it's just a letter opener.
It's nothing compared to what I'm going to do to you.
Or just like nothing compared to what I've been through up
exactly.
until this point.
Like, this is that nothing. Too. Also,
like, this is the worst you could do to me after everything that you, like, I don't think so.
I am beyond pain right now. Yeah. And I know, I love that about him. I also, another case of like an actor like playing like an emotion on top of like an emotion in conflict with an emotion. Like, that whole sequence where she's hypnotizing him, Missy, and Catherine Keener shows up for that scene too. Mm-hmm. I can't say enough about this. Because one thing I adore about it is the insidiousness of it. The fact that she has already started working on him.
Mm-hmm.
And he doesn't even know it. And it's just the one line where he's just like, she's asking him about his mother and about his past and everything. He's just like, wait, are we? And she just keeps asking him. And she's not being aggressive about it, but she's just pressing on. She's just guiding him where she wants him to go. And he's going until the point where he's locked and he can't move. And you just see the tears streaming down his face. And I actually got to see in a Q&A feature on the Blu-ray that I own. Jordan Peele talked about shooting that scene with Daniel Kaluuya. And he said, not only did he, you know, never dry out, because, you know, you shoot an actor enough times, eventually they're going to dry out. Not only did he never dry out, he managed to cry, like allow the tears to stream from his eyes in continuity. Like the tears would drop at the same line every time he would do it. And Jordan Peele says, and that is why I'm walking away from acting. I've resigned from acting because I've witnessed Daniel Kaluuya and I know I will never be anywhere near that. So it's over. Yeah. It's a good thing I've started directing.
Yeah.
But just the fact that like he has to be similar with Catherine Keener. They both have to be, they have to speak so softly, be so still. Everything is about the preparation and about just allowing it to happen. And I love that Jordan Peele can create like an environment like that where actors can just kind of do what they need to do and the camera gets it. Ah, so my jam. But seeing him suffer his guilt, seeing him go back literally to like, you know, like the memory, like reliving the memory, and then watching the struggle again of him fighting it, because you can feel him not wanting to go there, but being powerless against it. And all while playing hypnosis in a way that is believable. That's fucking hard. And I don't know how many actors could do it. And did Daniel Kaluuya get nominated for an Oscar for this movie? I can't even remember.
I believe
I don't pay
so.
Attention to,
I think he did.
Okay. Yeah. I don't pay attention to the Oscars. And it's not like I use them as like, yeah, I don't use them as a measurement of like what, you know, fine acting is or anything like that. But if anyone was ever going to be deserving of one, that work like that absolutely deserves to be acknowledged and totally. Celebrated. Oh,
yeah. No, like love him. Repeating ourselves again, just there, like there's not a bad performance in this movie. There's like everything and that's another reason why this is like for me the next evolution of Scream, because that movie, like, there's no bad performance in there. Maybe there's some like campy performances from some like
it's too red. But now he's legendary.
Or
so
that, and I was even thinking like the bitchy classmates in the bathroom.
but even
with those, like every single part matters. Yes. Like it builds the bigger picture, and that's exactly what this movie does. So it's and I appreciate that Jordan Peele would recognize that, just like that's like acting is not for me. But I mean, he's always been into comedy. But just like, cause I remember hearing the first time when it's just like Jordan Peele's making a movie, he's stepping into directing. And I always remember Jordan Peele, like first and foremost from Mad TV. That was kind of my first experience with him and Keegan Michael Key together. In fact, I've probably seen more of that than I ever did of,
Key and Peele.
Like, I remember they had the little skits where it was just like the two of them together, and they'd be on like game shows and stuff, and just really like obnoxious. They would get it, but they would like make everyone jump through hoops for them. But I was interested because I'm just like, oh, I know who this is, and it's like clearly he has clout in the business if like people can single him out and just be like, Jordan Peele's got a movie coming out. Like he's making a transition to this, and it's going to be horror. And not only that, but he even like said that, like, I'm only interested in doing horror. Like, you know, I could direct anything, but like for me, like horror is, you know, where I have the most fun. And that's what I think is like the most challenging to make, but also the most rewarding to make as well. And I mean, it certainly shows, because he was nominated as well, even though we don't give a shit about the Oscars. But I mean, like, he showed up, it was like his first time, and got nominated right away. So it really speaks volumes to kind of what he does, because this could be a scenario where, you know, because he might have clout in the business and people are just like, oh yeah, it's Jordan Peele, you know, like Tom Cruise can decide one day he wants to make a movie and it could suck ass, which it probably would. But, and then people would be like, oh yeah, like Tom Cruise made a movie, cool. But I'm sure people, you know, there'd be people who would like kiss his ass and just be like, yeah, it's great. Like Jordan Peele, like he made a movie and it was fucking phenomenal. So it's like he proved himself. So I'm glad that he made that transition, that he did this. And I'm I certainly like I up or not up us is you know, it's a movie that I really love as well. Probably not as much as this one, but I certainly am enjoying his trajectory so far. And I feel that he's going to be like, he's a future legend. Like if he's not one already, he's going to be one of the directors years from now that people are going to look back on and just like compare with the likes of Romero and Carpenter and Craven and Hooper. You know, it's like he's there. And that's why it's smart that he is kind of exclusive to horror, because horror fans are the best fans.
Yeah.
Maybe not the best, but I'll say like we're the most consistent. And
most enthusiastic,
the most enthusiastic and consistent that I, you know, that we're the ones that we build like fan bases and cult followings. And
we, we keep the thing going. Yeah. We pass on our horror legacies to, you know, the newbies. And I mean, that's actually, you know what, you got me thinking about like, on a completely, not completely unrelated note, but just like I was listening to a podcast discussing the internet as a means of communication and as a means of community. And I think that's why I'm on Instagram, because I immediately thought about Instagram because I just thought about my horror community, and also maybe even more specifically like my gay horror community. And it just kind of like warms my heart that there is like something to this highly problematic thing we call the internet that, and you know, high with that, you know, requires responsibility and tact and discipline that nobody, you know, displays. And, but at the same time, the other end of it is there is opportunity to be exposed to things you wouldn't be exposed to otherwise. And speaking back to just horror fandom, to, you know, like I don't watch trailers anymore, but I know when they're up because everybody in my feed reposts in their story the new horror trailer, and I'm just kind of like, oh, okay, that's coming, great, awesome, happy about that. It happened with Nope, with the trailer just like a few months ago when it dropped. I woke up in the morning, I turned on my phone, I'm scrolling, I see a horse, and I'm just like, what's up with that? It looks interesting. Oh, Jordan Peele. Fuck, Jordan Peele. And I tap on it and I watch the whole thing. But
well, I mean, I will say for that trailer and like even like the trailer for Us, and I don't remember the trailer for this movie, but I feel like at this point with like Get Out, like it, he hadn't like kind of established that that pedigree yet of being a director who's going to make this larger than life movie. But like even with the Nope trailer, there's nothing in that. There's nothing spoilery or that gives you any indication of what the movie is going to be about or where it's going. And I love that because that's how and I think it's funny to know that this movie, Get Out, was distributed or produced by Blumhouse. And then after that, I don't want to say severed ties, but he obviously moved on. He had his own production company like Monkey Paw, obviously. So I think maybe he was doing well enough that he didn't need Blumhouse, but it's just funny that like, cause we've talked about Blumhouse before and how they don't give a fuck about what they show in their trailers, that clearly Jordan Peele, like not only does he want creative control over his movies, but also the way in which they're marketed, because that's what I love about though, like Us. And presumably what I'm hoping with Nope is that I'm going to go in and I'm going to be completely surprised, because regardless of whether you liked Us, which, you know, we'll get to when we get to that podcast, you can't deny that, you know, that the first time you ever saw it, it was exciting to not know what direction it was going in. And that's what I feel like, that's kind of Jordan Peele's trademark.
You've got me thinking back, trying to remember the trailer, because I know I saw it for Get Out, and I can't.
Well, you talked about it. Is this like the no.
Yeah. That, and I remember that, but aside from that and just the expression that was emblazoned on the sides of buses and on billboards and, you know, everywhere, was just that expression, that fixed, hypnotic, shocked, I'm about to fall into, I was about to say the upside down. Sorry, I'm watching Stranger Things 4 also, but, I'm about to fall into the sunken place. Yeah. And, maybe there's some correlation. Hey. You, crossover universes?
Huh? No, thank you. I'm good. Right.
Anyway, I knew you weren't going to be up for that anyway. But so sunken place. But just that, you know, the with the tears streaming down. Yeah. I just remember that. No. And I remember thinking, what the fuck? I must see.
Yeah.
I must partake.
Yeah.
And also, yeah, hearing that Jordan Peele had done it. And also, I heard somewhere around that time, my bestie, who is still an actress, because you know, I'm not an actress anymore. But she had read in some interview Jordan Peele discussing, like, you know, what we all knew him from, which was Mad TV and Key and Peele and everything, and how the end game for him was always to just get to a place where he could do what he's doing, like what we know him for. He wanted to be an auteur. Because also, we haven't brought up screenwriter also. I mean, he wrote the screenplay for Get Out as well. So everything that we're praising in terms of, like, you know, the words that are being spoken and, like, the turns that, that it takes as a screenplay, that's due to him too. But it was also he could move into this position of filmmaker and horror filmmaker at that and tell the stories that he wanted to see being told. It's not like he didn't enjoy comedy, but he knew that, oh, okay, this is where I'm achieving success. I'll keep this going. Luckily, I like Keegan, you know, and I like creating things. Because also there was a lot of social commentary all over Key and Peele. Yeah, but I really appreciate that he's doing it in this horror genre, because that was one thing also. Ooh, because I remember after I saw Get Out, I remember thinking, like, I don't know if it was a prescient moment on my part, but I just remember thinking, Jordan Peele is bringing back the Twilight Zone, you know, without knowing that Paramount Plus was going to mount a new series of The Twilight Zone where Jordan Peele is the executive producer. But it largely felt, even more so than like Stepford Wives, which was less fresh in my mind, I just kind of felt like it feels like a feature-length, modern-day Twilight Zone episode that's culturally and socially relevant and entertaining as fuck.
Yeah.
Because Twilight Zone was fucking entertaining as well.
So. I mean, like, horror is hot right now. It's hot. And... Yeah. We can thank Jordan Peele for that. He's one of the figures who have, you know, brought it to the forefront. So I'm excited for what's to come next. In terms of Get Out, do you have anything else that you would like to add?
I think I said it all.
Okay, perfect. Then
I'm looking at my notes and go ahead.
Let's get to the cherry picker then. Okay, so a brand new segment that we've kind of developed with the Cherry Picker moving forward that we didn't have a name for last week, but we just kind of called it like the MVP. But actually, shout out and thank you to, because I literally just saw this in the comments this morning. Actually, Andre Felix, our editor, saw this in the YouTube comments. So thank you for that, Andre, and for editing this. But picked this out of this comment by I have it written down here, Samantha Warren 1994, who just said, call it the cherry on top. So that's what we're calling it, is the cherry on top. And this is the one person who we think is the MVP. And this is not a vote, this is not a contention. We're just gonna decide together. It's gonna be unanimous. I don't know if we're on this. We haven't, but that's the fun of it, because we're gonna do it and we're gonna decide. I'm gonna put Rod Williams.
I knew you were. Yes.
Was that who you were gonna say?
Love him. Absolutely. I think there's definitely a case to be made for Chris, just in terms of all he endures and everything like that. But Rod gives me breath. He gives me. You know,
Chris is definitely, I think, like, there's a case for, like, if you were to ever do, like, a, because that's, we didn't talk about this, it's just, like, this is a final boy movie, because, you know, those are not a rare breed, but, you know, fewer and far between, and I think that, like, Chris is definitely, if you were to ever do a ranking of, like, final boys, Chris would be pretty high up there. I don't know, I'd have to look at some of the competitors, but I think in this case... because you said it yourself, like, Rod is just like the best friend you could have. I mean, he's looking after the, what's the dog's name? Do we remember?
Oh, fuck. I didn't write that down. Sorry. I don't
remember. It's okay. It's okay. but, you know, he's looking after him. The thing that I noticed, like, when he sent him that picture of Andre that he took, like, literally, like, within, like, a millisecond, he, like, called him. And he's like, that's Dre. Like, it's just, like, he's that reliable that he's just, like, he's basically his gal Friday.
Uh-huh.
His guy Friday.
Like, he is his through and through.
Yeah, he's got him.
I love
it. And that's why I think that that Rod deserves the cherry on top. So
yeah, I concur.
I'm glad that we agreed, because I mean we always have to agree. There's you know, there's no debate.
There's a lot of times we don't, but yeah. Thank you, Rod, and thank you, Lil Rel Howery, for playing him so expertly.
Nice.
Yeah.
So anyway, the actual cherry picker last week for Poltergeist, who deserves to die the most? I said Mr. Teague, because he moved the gravestones, but he didn't move the bodies. Why? Right. Why? You said pool worker number two, because I love you. I love you.
I love you. I love you. And?
And across Patreon, Instagram, and YouTube, we've got 214 for Mr. Teague and 102 for pool worker number two.
That many? Wow. Thanks, guys. <You're>,
I will say that, because I think the thing that always surprises me the most is the Instagram vote, because it's normally like it's always the opposite of whatever the majority is, and it was actually Instagram was tied for this vote.
Wow.
So,
that's impressive though, like wow. Okay.
Yeah. I also did include like the little clips on Instagram, which I started to do just so people knew. To present the evidence, so you didn't have to do vote this predator, blah, 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 like this happened because of this.
Oh, I still might, but
I know that'll never change. Let's actually look to see what the people have actually said about this. So Anthony DiPuzzo says Mr. Teague hands down. You left the bodies and only moved the headstones. Love this movie so much. Perfect summer horror blockbuster.
Yay! Agreed.
Evan Purcell says, Mr. Teague probably should win, but I like this guy too much in Return of the Living Dead to vote for him. So I'm voting for Eddie's latest random side character pick.
That is amazing. Thank you for paying attention.
Johnny M says, Teague is the absolute worst and deserves to die 1,000 deaths, but my skin crawls right off every time I see that I love you creep hitting on Dana. So hells yeah, he's getting my vote on this one.
That is amazing. Oh, well, predatory nature should be banned.
Relax. You know, there's a few more comments. Thomas Baker.
But that's really cool.
Thomas Baker says, Mr. Teague, because he forgot to move the I think that's supposed to say bodies, but it says bobbies. And he didn't
say bobbies.
He forgot to move the bobbies. He did not forget. He just did not do it. And then Curse Gory says Mr. Teague wanted to make money. So I don't really know if that's a defense for Mr. Teague or just a statement that, you
at
know,
least he had a plan. He
wanted to make money. And then somebody says Mr. Teague. That's it.
Okay.
So
that is so
unfortunately
cool.
Eduardo, you do not have first pick of
I
of
understand.
Get
I'm just happy I got over 100
you're
people
just,
on my side.
I'm just glad to be included.
Yeah, right? Thanks, guys.
I'm going to this is okay, and you know what? Short and sweet for me. I'm going to say Rose Armitage, or is it Armitage? They say it two different
they
ways.
Say Armitage. They say it Armitage. Yeah. Everybody says Armitage that I could remember.
I'm going to say Rose because, I mean, and this is, like, this has nothing to do, like, Allison Williams, like, perfect. Like, you should have been a Ghostface killer. The reason I'm voting for her, because she is pure evil. She's like the most evil, despicable horror movie character I can think of right now. I'm sure I'll think of more at some point, but I mean, like, just in this movie, because, you know, regardless of, you know, who comes above her and who potentially groomed her to be this way, she's just an awful person because she makes us fall in love with her. Like, she makes us trust her. And the fact that that's ripped out from under us, like, that makes it all the worse. And normally, because, you know, I do love my villains, but I don't love her. Like, I'm rooting for her to die.
Yes.
So that's why she's my pick.
Oh, my skin crawls when he's choking her at the end and she just starts giving him this grin.
Yeah.
Like, oh, yes, I'm turning you into the monster. You're going to think about me for the rest of your life. You're going to remember killing me. And then when he stops, she's got like, wait, oh, I'm just going to die like in the street? But and then, of course, help.
Yeah.
Help. But I never thought about that, though, actually. The fact that, like, she endears herself to him and us, for the most part, I think, if, for those of us who don't suspect her the whole time, which I think is most people. And then the betrayal comes, and you're like, damn, she's good. Because at least her brother is, his creepiness is forthcoming. Like, there's nothing hidden with her brother. There's no hidden agenda. You know exactly what
you're getting. It's almost like you're being nominated for, like, not only being evil, but also being a liar. Whereas your brother's just your brother's just evil, you know. Like, he's truthful in who he is.
Right. Yeah. Okay. Cool. And yeah, it's hard to think well, who's worse than that? So I can come up with maybe a potentially controversial person for my cherry picker this week. I'm gonna pick as per the rules that we've established. Roman Armitage, because he, or Armitage, however the fuck you want to say it, I don't care. Roman! After all I talk about Scream, another Roman. who started it all. Oh my god, it always starts with the Romans, doesn't it? But that's why. Because none of this shit would have happened if it weren't for this fucker's little idea and, like, infomercial that he puts together with his family. He recruited them all. He got them to do it. He seems largely like the patriarch of the idea. And everything about him is off-putting and wrong. So he deserves to die the most. It just makes me sad I didn't get to see him die. I had to watch the dude whose body he stole kill himself to off Roman. Yeah. I wish I could see Roman die. That's how much.
Just like him being in the sunken place and then just like maybe like poof, like into smoke.
No, I'd be fine with, like, you know, Rod just running him over or something like that. But it would be better if I could see Roman's body. So if he were in the sunken place, I have a feeling it would be his body.
Yeah. Maybe even like a Ready or Not, like the family, like exploding and like,
where they just explode at dawn. Yeah. Oh my god, that'd be fun. Yeah. Kind of, maybe. If I could somehow get him back in his body.
Yeah.
But that's my choice, and I feel like the case makes itself.
Okay. I did want to mention something, because you actually messaged me beforehand, because you asked as per the rules if Roman is a valid nomination, because we do have the rules in place. And I guess there was your hesitation was because of rule number 3, which says if the nominee is a supernatural, scientific, or extraterrestrial being, they may only count as a valid nomination if they are shown to inhabit their original form. Which Roman does not in this movie, because he is technically in Walter, or whatever we're calling his body. However, because we do see the video later on, so it does apply to number 5, which says the nominee must be physically seen on screen and exist within the real time of their applicable media. So because Roman is still in the movie, he's still a character in the movie, even though he's not in his original form, but body. We do see him physically on screen in the video, that we were able to work this out. And I allowed this to work, but I do not, but going back to the
video, we conferred people. I wanted to make sure, because I didn't want to make a case and have an Evil Dead all over
again. Yeah, we don't want that. We don't want any more.
We don't want that. I even asked you
for next week's episode of a possible nominee, and we decided that they don't count. So see, we are playing by the rules. Like, the rules aren't changing. So they're set in stone, and I think that they're very fair, because I do consider Roman to be a very prominent character in this movie. So anyway, those are the choices. You can vote your heart, vote your conscience, and the polls will be open on the YouTube community section. They'll be open on Instagram if you go to the Cherry Picker Pod. And also, you can vote on Patreon. And if you do want to become a Patreon supporter, we are introducing a new feature, which is starting this month, June, which will occur every month, where we will actually be recording a bonus episode of The Cherry Picker, which will be exclusive to Patreon. And you will get that once a month. I think it'll come at the end of the month. And this month's theme is going to be cursed films, which shouldn't be a surprise, because we've been talking about that quite a bit, and we've been covering a lot of cursed films, such as The Exorcist, Poltergeist, and Cursed. And you know, there's a lot to talk about the subject of cursed films, and if it's real or bullshit, and what any of it means. And if you want to check out Patreon, you can get that at the Freddy Krueger tier. But even if you want to support us on the entry level, that will get you early access to our regular Cherry Picker episodes. You'll get to see those a few days earlier. So with that said, I want to welcome a plethora of new Patreon supporters. So let's give a warm welcome to Jalen, Alt Lover 85, M7MDGH, which it was their handle, but that's what we're going by. Sean McAllister, Todd Lyden, and Billiams 444.
444.
So thank you very much for coming aboard, and hopefully
welcome.
Hopefully you guys will continue to enjoy early access or the bonus Cherry Picker episode that we will be giving you later this month if you are signed up for that. But with that said, I just wanted to remind everyone who is listening that you can watch the Cherry Picker on YouTube by going to the Cherry Picker channel. And also, if you are watching us on YouTube, you can listen to us in audio format on all major podcast streaming platforms. The RSS link is in the descriptions below. We do have a review, a Apple Podcast review, which I will read to you right now. So from Sav91, I can't say enough good things about this podcast. Zach and Eddie have great chemistry, and even when I haven't seen the movie they're talking about, they're still really funny to listen to. I've been struggling with my mental health recently, and having this podcast to look forward to every week has really helped. So thanks, guys. You know what?
Thank you.
Me too. I struggle like crazy, and actually recording these is like a huge help. So I'm glad to hear that it's also therapeutic for you to listen to as well.
Yeah, so palliative for all concerned, I hope.
Yeah. Yeah. So thanks, Sav91. And
thanks, Sav91. Awesome.
Eduardo, where can the good people find you on social?
You had to talk a lot just now. Anyway, Eddie, that you know me. What did you ask me? Oh, my socials. Right. Sorry, it's late for both of us, I think. you can find me at Edward is Truth on Instagram and see me post about all my exploits. Namely, right now I've got a YouTube channel started that is also Edward is Truth, all one word. I just react to movies. And for all of June, I'm doing LGBTQ themed movies that were voted on in my story on Instagram. So
of course you are.
Follow me on Instagram and vote. Yeah, follow me on Instagram and vote on the movies you want to watch me watch. Or maybe even some series. Who knows what's coming next?
Who knows?
What about you, Zach?
You can find me on Instagram at RetroBitchface, all one word. You can find me on Twitter at ZachCherry8. And I've been a lot more active on there recently too. I just want to point that out. And also my main YouTube channel, which is Zach Cherry, which most of you probably know, but just in case you didn't, I'll throw it out there. What do we got going on next week?
The that one with the girl who it's not over and they come back. It's called Scream 2.
Is that's going to be your introduction for Scream 2? It's just like, it's like that girl that it was not over for comes back for a Scream 2.
It's that girl. Yeah. And they come back and, you know, they all
wear
pajamas or something.
Yeah, there we go. Scream 2 is next week. We want to stagger our Scream episodes. We don't want to like throw them all in together. So that's what's going on next week. We're taking on the sequel. So please join us for that. And until then, we will be right back.